Well, excuse me, princess.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 370, recorded on November 28th, 2014.
Hello, and welcome to the 370th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 203rd episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Paul S. Novak.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and often includes gaming history.
Well, there is a gaming history this week, as I promised.
Woohoo!
Devin's not here because Devin's dealing with stuff. He should be here next week, though, according to him.
Yeah, but, you know, the holidays do things like that to all sorts of people.
Yeah. Anyways, speaking of the holidays, what have you been playing, Paul?
I've been playing a lot of Dungeon Keeper.
Oh. Still?
Yeah.
Even with the having to wait for stuff mechanic?
Yeah, because, I mean, you know what? And that's exactly why, because I've just been getting busier again.
So having to wait for stuff actually fits into your schedule.
Right. And that's part of what I love about social and mobile games is that they're, you know, specifically designed to be a 5 or 6 minute experience.
You know, that would make a perfect segue, but I got to talk about what I've been playing too. So, I've been playing Dragon Age Inquisition and I am just about ready to quit, which is...
Okay, why?
Because they screwed up everything and, you know, the only thing that was keeping me there was the story, and at some point, not even the story is going to allow me, not even the story is going to keep me playing. I'm waiting for them to release what the cheat codes are, because the first two games had the same cheat codes. This one does not. And I think it's because it's using the Frostbite engine or whatever. It's a different developer within BioWare, so I don't know. But I'm just saying, you know, at some point I'm going to throw up my hands and just forget about it, you know, and that would kill me because I'm really into the story. There's just a point in which I have to say I can't do this anymore.
Is it just too hard?
It's hard because the controls are screwy and the combat is screwy and the gameplay mechanics of, you know, having to do all these fetch quests and stuff before you can move on. You know, if I wanted to play a JRPG, I'd play a JRPG.
It sounds like what you're saying is that there's a fundamental lack of proper design in there.
Basically. And the thing is that it was a multiplayer-only game for a very long time from what I found out. So what happens is that it seems like they slapped on a single player and just left it at that. So what might be fine for a multiplayer experience is not fine for a single player experience. I just picked up Halo, the Master Chief Collection. I haven't popped it in yet. That didn't update today, but people are complaining about that update. But all the complaints are about the multiplayer. Now I'm just going to be doing the single player for a bit, so that doesn't bother me right now.
Well, fair enough.
And I did some Black Friday shopping, and my mission was accomplished. And my major coup, and I told you this earlier, was finding a copy of Super Smash Bros. For the Wii U. Because I got to Toys R Us at like 4 o'clock, you know, and there was only one copy left and it was in the wrong place. And I figure it's because someone picked it up and then put it back in the wrong place and had
it. Or they hid it for later.
Or that, but no, they would have hid it in back of the games. Anyway, it was in the wrong place, and had it not been in the wrong place, I wouldn't have found it. I picked it up, I bought it, and I think that was the last copy in the store, at least for now. But the only time I would get it for 40% off. So.
Ah, lucky you.
Yeah, so my cousin...
So wait, didn't you have to buy two in order to get 40% off?
No, well, I got other games.
Oh, okay.
I got Halo for myself, for one.
Right.
Anyway, so I haven't popped that in yet, and I know there's probably going to be a download because there's been so many patches that have been released for it. Like I said, I'm not interested in the multiplayer.
Yeah, I'm often not interested in multiplayers.
I mean, the multiplayer mode that I love from Halo is not in this collection because it was in Halo 3 ODST and Halo Reach, and neither of them had Master Chief in it. So, I you know, it's like, oh, come on. I mean, I'd pay for a DLC that added it. But, you know, I think it's probably going to be a part of Halo 5, so I'll just have to wait. Anyway,
but you know, you're a braver man than I am, because I had absolutely no desire to go out for Black Friday.
Yeah.
Aside from, you know, not really having anybody right now to shop for.
You know, my shopping is not yet complete, at least for myself, and that is I'm looking to replace my TV, and there are now affordable 4K TVs. So I'm
yeah. You know what? That's exactly the same thing that I was not, you know, a TV specifically, but it's like I do most of my shopping like for non-perishable items for the year during or just after Christmas.
Hmm.
You know, like those gift boxes full of like bath gel and, you know, shower gel, and, you know, it often has like fantastic prices. It's like, yeah. Why don't you just buy it for yourself, and then you don't have to remember to do it later in the year.
Mm. I was thinking about the perfect gift for you, and I figured out what it might be, and that would be a Nintendo e-card for credit for buying stuff from Nintendo's online store.
Because, I appreciate the thought, honey, but please don't.
Well, here's the thing, because the thing is that you're worried about the space in your place, and that doesn't take up any space, getting games off the virtual console or whatever they call it now.
You're absolutely right. It's a very thoughtful idea, but yeah. I don't really have time. I mean, that's why I returned the Lego game in Bayonetta, because I don't really have time right now.
Well, that's the thing about a gift card, is that you can just hold on to it until you actually need it.
You know what I did? You know, back in the day when I exchanged gifts with more people, I was a huge fan of Netflix gift cards. Uh-huh. And let me tell you why. Because if that other person that I gave the gift card to
got the subscription, yeah, I know all about it.
No. It was for a month worth of their service. So if they were a member, all they had to do was type in the gift code and they got a free month. But if they didn't use their gift card, the amount of a month was credited back to me, and I ended up getting a free month.
Oh, because I remember that if you got someone to join Netflix with that thing, you would get some sort of award.
No. My favorite part was like they rather than letting a gift card expire and you losing out on all value, as is often the case with those gift cards, by the way.
Not all.
You got to use them within a year or they just expire, and then like you're out money for no reason.
Papa John's gift card I have is going to last forever. The problem is that there's no longer a Papa John's near me, so.
Well, I mean, this holiday season, you guys got to be very careful about the policies on your gift cards.
Yeah. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. And the thing is that this was a perfect segue to what you were talking about. Nintendo patents Game Boy emulation for use in mobile devices. And this comes to us from TechCrunch. A new patent published by the U.S. Patent Trademark Office yesterday details an invention by Nintendo that would allow it to emulate its mobile game consoles, including the Game Boy line of devices specifically, in other settings, including on seat-back displays in airplanes and trains, and on mobile devices, including cell phones. The patent is an updated take on an older piece of IP, so it's not an entirely new idea, but it's still very interesting to consider that Nintendo could have renewed interest in the idea of running it on its own back catalog on many different kinds of screens. Generally, it's been used by fan communities to play their favorite Nintendo games of old on PCs, Macs, and mobile devices. But in this patent, Nintendo details using it for its own legitimate licensed distribution of software. The patent would see it expand those offerings to a range of devices, including potentially smartphones. Emulators on iOS generally get shut down as soon as the Apple review team is made aware of their function, so a legitimate offering from Nintendo on the platform would likely be met with huge consumer interest. Again, though, Nintendo has laid down patents in this general concept in the past, so its interest in protecting IP on the matter doesn't necessarily indicate any desire to explore product offerings in this area. And what I think they're saying is that they put the patent down so that they have the patent on that device just so no one else can put it on there.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, Nintendo as a corporation is no fool. They're going to keep their options open the same way that Disney or Warner Brothers would want to make, you know, let's just make sure we have our legal bases covered in case 5 years from now we want to do that.
But in this case, the patent is different in that it's naming devices and it's also expanding the use, which is a pattern for when someone, not necessarily Nintendo, but other publishers intend to release their stuff on that platform. So if something like Pokemon, which was a Game Boy game, is on the original Pokemon was on iOS for
oh god, I would hope they would update the graphics.
They probably will. I mean, remember all those Game Boy, the original Game Boy games, they were all in color. It's just that, you know, they had, what's it called? The Game Boy Color activated that, you know?
The original Game Boy games were not in color.
There was.
No, they weren't. No, they were specifically coded into different textures, and those textures could later be colorized, but those games were not in color. Those games were not programmed in color.
I'm pretty sure the original Pokemon, what was it, Pokemon Red and Yellow?
Nope.
Red and Blue. Or it was just Pokemon, period.
Right. Okay. Oh, okay. You mean the original Pokemon games?
Yeah, yeah.
That I can't speak as strongly about, but like the original edition of, you know, Mario Brothers or Tetris was not done in color.
I don't think Nintendo's going to be releasing Tetris on because that's been done to death. However,
I thought you meant the first generation of Game Boy games.
Although
not the first generation of Pokemon.
Didn't Mario RX originate on the Game Boy? Not the color, but just the Game Boy.
What's Mario RX?
That's the Mario version of Tetris.
Oh, you mean Dr. Mario?
Dr. Mario.
Right. Yeah, that was on. Yeah, that was on Game Boy.
Yeah, that's basically what Poker Smash is. It's Mario, Dr. Mario with poker cards. Anyway, so if they released say the original Legend of Zelda on the iOS device, would you buy it?
I don't know.
Bought it on every platform you've ever owned.
It's true. I have bought just about every release of the original game. I don't know though. If I did, I would do it with full knowledge that I wouldn't ever play it because the screen is just so small compared to how I'm used to seeing it.
Hmm. You can tip it on its side. Can you imagine it?
Once I get an iPad, I might do that.
Yeah, an iPad, and they have a redone score. You know, you've heard the 16-bit version of that score that they rejiggered.
You know, I'm sorry. Sometimes when you update something, it's not better. It's just different.
Anyway, see, even I remember that in my brain. You know, because I did play the original Gold Cart. You know, when it first came out, the very first day it came out.
I still have mine.
Yeah. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Paul.
Oh, hold on a second. I just put food in my mouth.
Well, I went. It's your turn, you see.
Yeah, I know, but I didn't realize that we were... I mean, why don't you make me talk? Unless I'm going to be able to swallow my oatmeal. Give me a second.
Wait, was there anything else you wanted to say about that that previous item?
I thought you were going to talk more for a second. Hold on. I'm sorry, I didn't realize that we were moving on.
Well, if you had something else to say about Apple potentially going on smartphone and seatbacks and airplanes.
No, I was eating oatmeal.
Yeah. Actually, you know, the thing about games on airplanes is that all the controllers are basically Nintendo controllers, you know, original NES controllers to begin with. You know?
Yeah. That's a fairly astute point of view.
Let me ask you a question. How fast could you speed run The Legend of Zelda? Because now I'm thinking, imagine if someone gets on the plane, plays Legend of Zelda, and tries to finish it before the plane lands.
Oh, I could finish The Legend of Zelda in the time it takes me to get from New York to L.A.
Really?
It's not a fantastically complicated game when you know exactly where everything is.
Yeah, well, that's the point. I never knew where everything was when I was playing it.
Well, because you're a twerp.
No. No, I just, you know, it was a new experience for me. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Paul.
EA named one of the best places for LGBT equality, and this comes to us from Games Industry Biz. When it comes to LGBT rights, Electronic Arts has been one of the more outspoken game companies, and it's being recognized for its support of the gay community by the Human Rights Campaign. For the third year in a row, the Human Rights Campaign has decided to name EA one of the best places for LGBT equality. EA earned a score of 100 on the Corporate Equality Index, which meant that EA met the requirements for, quote, partner benefits, organizational competency on LGBT issues, a public commitment to the equality for the broader community, as well as equal employee benefits. EA has been active in showing its support for diversity and equality, expanding its pride presence at parades around the world, including Los Angeles, San Francisco, Seattle, Madrid, Stockholm, Vancouver, Montreal, Austin, and Orlando. Additionally, EA was a corporate sponsor of the first ever Lesbians Who Teach Summit.
Lesbians Who Teach.
Oh. Lesbians Who Tech. Okay, who came up with that name? Lesbians Who Tech Summit and the 2014 Out for Undergrad Technology Conference. This past August, EA won the 11th Annual International Innovations in Diversity Award from Diversity Journal for installing programs aimed at creating more diversified and inclusive workplace. Quote, "We are very honored to be recognized again as best place to work," said Andre Chambers, head of diversity and inclusion at EA. "We believe that fostering an inclusive environment helps us to create great games and represent our diverse set of players, and I'm proud to work at a company that has strong employee values."
The reason I bring this up is because, like, for the past 3 years or something like that, EA has been voted as the worst company in the world by people who just get angry when EA sells $15 downloadable content.
Right, but you know what? If you look at all the different reports and put them all together about what anybody has to say about EA, apparently they're an awful place to work for, but at least they treat everyone equally bad.
But that's not true.
Right. I mean, you know, take everything with a grain of salt. I mean,
they make it sound like
corporate equality index.
Yeah, I mean, you know, apparently, EA is worse than BP Oil or Monsanto, et cetera, et cetera. The thing that I might note about the equal pay is that that's not just equal pay for alternative sexual lifestyles. It's for men and women. And one of the things that's been a big craw is that, you know, it's still a practice in a lot of companies that women get paid less for the same exact job that men get paid for.
Which is absolutely galling, but you're 100% right. As far as making sure they have a diverse workforce, EA has for, 20 years, or however long since its beginnings, has been, pretty level that way. And not for nothing, EA kind of oversaw, published The Sims, which is one of the most inclusive games ever.
And if you ever watch Dragon Age is very, has a lot of alternate lifestyle romances in it as well as Mass Effect. You know, so BioWare is a big part of that. I think BioWare was like that before EA got it. I just think that makes EA and BioWare more of a match.
Right. And you know what? It actually is really nice sometimes to see a large company getting recognized for putting their money where their mouth is. Yeah. I mean, I wonder how Nintendo scored.
I know that Disney probably scored very high because they always have. And I know
Disney always scores very highly on this, on the corporate equality index.
I think Nintendo of America may have scored highly. I don't know anything about Nintendo Japan, but Nintendo of America, despite that brouhaha earlier in the year about their Sims type game. Jeez, I forgot the name of it already. Okay, we're moving on to the next item. Sony settles over misleading Vita ads, and this also comes to us from Games Industry Biz. Sony has agreed to a settlement on charges that it ran a series of misleading ads for the PlayStation Vita around the time of the handheld's 2012 launch, according to the Federal Trade Commission. Additionally, an ad firm employed by Sony has settled charges of deceptive advertising through the use of Twitter endorsements from employees who did not disclose their connections to the ad firm or the Vita maker. The misleading ads promised that Vita would, quote-unquote, introduce game-changing features like remote play with the PlayStation 3 titles, allowing users to start playing games on the console, pause them at any moment, then pick up where they first left off in the handheld. This feature, however, was only available for a few PS3 games, and the pause and save capability described in ads as it varied significantly from game to game, the FTC said. For example, with respect to MLB 12 The Show, consumers can only save the game to the PS Vita after finishing the entire 9-inning game on their PS3. On top of that, the FTC alleges that Sony neglected to notify users would need to buy copies of the game on both systems to use that feature. Sony also advertised the 3G version of the Vita as being capable of playing live multiplayer games through the network when it was only allowed for turn-based multiplayer. Finally, the FTC took exception to Sony's quote-unquote remote play feature, which was touted as letting users play their PS3 games on the handheld. An advertising firm assisting Sony on the Vita launch campaign also came under fire from the FTC. Deutsche LA created ads touting the aforementioned features, but also ran a Twitter campaign using the hashtag GameChanger a month before the system's launch. An executive with a company asked employees to post Twitter comments using the hashtag. Some of the employees did so without disclosing their connections to either Deutsche or Sony in violation of the FTC's endorsement guidelines. As part of the settlement, Sony will email those who can identify as early adopters of the Vita, purchase the system before June of 2012, and offer them a $25 refund or a $50 voucher good for select games or services. Additionally, Sony and Deutsche Le are both barred from repeating their misleading advertising in the future. I think the number one thing there was that you had to buy both versions of the game. I think that would be the bigger, you know, omission, you know, not telling people that they had to buy two versions of the same game in order to use that feature. Although I don't
think... I think the bigger, you know, having had a career both as a game maker and in advertising, I think the bigger issue here is that, you know, we're still... scratch that. I lost what I was going to say. I lost. It was going to be a good point, and I forgot what it was.
It'll come back to you.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I interrupted. I'm sorry for that.
Please
continue.
That was fine. Well, I didn't have anything else to say about other than what I just said.
Okay. So it came back to me. So, you know, not for nothing personally, as you know, as having had a career both in making games and in the advertising industry, what's really interesting here is that they're being held accountable, not specifically because, you know, they did something out of the ordinary, but kind of because they got caught. You know, people, agencies and companies all the time try to, you know, build it as much grassroots buzz for their games as they can, and they go and... you know, use their personal accounts to hashtag Twitter or whatever. So you don't have to, you know, and I think it's a fairly common practice to not disclose your relationship, you know, as long as you're stating facts. And the reason why Sony and Deutsche got caught was because they were doing things, you know, they were tweeting out things that weren't true. Whether or not it was intended and just got canned at the last minute, or they were written to be deliberately misleading, it's the suspicion of the second part that makes it sanctionable.
Yeah, I wonder what Jordan would think, because he was a launch purchaser of the Vita, you know, so he would have gotten the email to either get $25 refund or $50 in credit for stuff. And I think that's a little bit surprising to me in that they're actually, well, maybe they're forced to, you know, offer money, you know, straight up money as refund instead of just giving... you know, oh, by the way, here, we'll give you credit for games, you know, on the PlayStation Store, which is not a punishment at all if you already own the games or you don't see anything on the store you want. You know, I guess you could pay for a little, for 5/7 of your PlayStation Network Plus account, but I mean,
yeah, I'm almost never a fan of sanctions being that they have to, you know, give away their product for free. That's just advertising for them.
Yeah. So they have the option of just getting $25 back, which is nice.
It just seems unfair.
And considering that the PlayStation Vita was almost DOA when it first hit, you know, almost no one was buying it, I think they were punished for their own campaign.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, I don't think their campaign worked. But I will say, you know, if you bought the Vita expecting some of those features and you found out that they were limited or non-existent, yeah, I would be a little bit annoyed too. You know, this is why, you know, this is the pains that you have to be if you're an early adopter. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, caveat emptor here. You know, I mean, Sony was supposed to, you know, fulfill their end of the bargain. But I'm just saying, you know, early adopters have to deal with a lot of crap. And it's part and parcel of what, you know, like I had to deal with a lot of crap when I got the Xbox One, you know, on day one, because I had to return the one that I bought because it had a faulty drive. And of course, you know, Microsoft quickly sent me a new one, you know, so it was painless. But still, you know, you have to expect it. I mean, it's... If you want to be a safe shopper... and say just wait 6 months before you buy something, and more power to you, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like you're not going to be able to get a launch console after the fact. I mean, you know, I picked up a launch PS3 because it was the only one that was backwards compatible. You know, that's why we have a second sale market.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I wasn't too heartbroken about not getting a Wii, because I could just say, you know what, I can't get a Wii now. Well, you know, I'll wait 6 months, a year, and see if I want a Wii, And the desire to get the Wii just faded and faded and faded until I said, yeah, you know, it's something I can live without. I mean, you know, and maybe not for you because, you know, you have exclusive franchises on the Wii that you really had to have. I mean, Twilight Princess and all that stuff. But for people who couldn't get a, you know, people like me who couldn't get a Wii, you say, okay, I'll just wait and see if I want one.
I mean, you know, having reached a certain age, I've gotten a different perspective on the immediacy of my consumer products.
Yeah.
You know, so I tend to do without as just a matter of course. So I, you know, I'm not gonna pay retail for just about anything anymore.
I might pick up a Wii One soon.
Oh, good for you.
There are some, and the thing is that, well, here's the thing is, I want to get a Wii that's still backwards compatible with the GameCube. See,
that would be the original Wii, and I don't think they ever stopped having that as a feature.
Oh, okay, that's good because there's some game.
Yeah, Nintendo doesn't do shit like that.
That's not entirely true, you know. Mm. But
if they're going to change the way something functions, they're going to sell it under a different name. So just go buy a Wii.
Yeah, well, here's is that. Well, that's true because hold on 1 second. When I went from a Game Boy Advance to a Game Boy to a DS.
Right, well, completely different system.
I know, it's just that I was disappointed that I couldn't play my Game Boy Color games anymore.
Right, but they told you, like, what did you expect them to do with the other screen, dude?
I don't know, you could play Game Boy Color, you could play Game Boy Advance games on the DS, though. Anyways, you know, it was sad, but, you know, I'm fine. I still have that same DS, though. The same original fatty DS. You know, not the XL, not the 2DS, just the regular DS. I haven't played it in a long while either. You know what's funny is that when I traded it in, I traded it in when the DS Lite came out, right? So everybody was trading in there. I got a blue one with little sparklies on it because a girl had traded in her DS for something else. And so I had this, you know, with all these rhinestones on it. And that's
Oh, who are you kidding? You loved it.
Yes, that's why I got it. I said, look, this one comes with a bonus. It came with rhinestones glued on it. That's why I got it. Because it had a bonus.
Yes, I can understand.
Yes. Anyways, we're going to move on to listener feedback. Go ahead, Paul.
From Alpha Shard. Hey, guys. Great episode. Lots to respond to. I agree with Jonah on the perspective of those that way to hire people already working. It does make a person seem very disloyal, but it doesn't seem to be a valued thing anymore. At returns, I have no problem admitting to making bad choices, so I don't make up excuses either when returning something. Though most of the time, it's a faulty product for whatever reason. I think I've gotten myself to the point where I am very careful about impulse buying without ensuring I like or really need this product. With games, I'm always trying to do the demo or watch YouTube videos of a game, but I have had games bought that I wanted to return, and now I even have some on my Steam list. I may have to do some trading to clean up that list a bit. Yes, but this is one of the reasons why I love Audibles, because you can just return it whenever for whatever reason. But moving on. At gameplay versus story, this seems like a balancing act at times. There are games that had great story but painful gameplay, such as Legacy of Kain and Soul Reaver. Then games with great game mechanic but weird story like Eternal Sonata. It's great when a game has both. I think story is the bitch, as Paul said, as so many a lot of times skip or ignore to get back to playing the game. Oh yeah, so he agrees with me. At Valve, I'm glad they are doing this to help clean out some of the crap that seemed to get through in complete games and games that just should never have been started. I'm looking at Goat Simulator there, and I agree that you shouldn't have to pay to beta test something. I do feel like this whole early access and beta testing is getting abused and allowing lazy game developing to happen. Beta testing is a skill set because you need people that are not only willing, but actively looking for ways to break a game or to do things the game designers didn't intend to happen.
You know, that's why what happened with Minecraft was a little bit more organic. Marcus Persson wasn't looking for a way to make a buck on alpha and beta testing. He was just saying, you know what, a lot of people are interested in this. You know what, if they really are into it, you know what, I'll pay them. They can pre-order the game right now, and they can just, you know, send suggestions, because with what Mojang was doing was they were taking suggestions very seriously, and the game was changing because of the suggestions of what the people who already invested in that game were doing. You know, it wasn't like pre-planned. It was more like, oh, you know what? All these people are just, let me just, you know, pre-order that and let them play with a pre-order until it's ready, you know. And that game was in beta testing for a very long time until he actually released it. So, I mean, but now it's become a thing, you know. It's become more...
Don't you hate when things become a thing?
I mean, not mainstream, but it becomes corporate, basically. You know, almost corporate, but... Or at least abused. Anyways, move on.
At Sony getting hacked, on the one hand, I do want those companies to have better security for their customers, but on the other, it really isn't right for hackers to be giving out password information either. I don't trust those hackers' motives either, and I am experiencing similar password changing / managing exhaustion as you guys as well.
Just keep moving on to game devaluation.
At game devaluation, I wonder if Beyond Earth is considered a AAA game or not. Since I got it digitally, it was $54, nowhere near $35, much less $22. I think they've only recently been put on sale for lower prices for Black Friday, and of course, it's presented differently in the US, UK, and EU, and Australia. All have different prices for the same game. I do expect digital games to be cheaper than physical copies of the game. This is also reminds me of an article where we maybe don't value games as much as we used to due to the very cheap prices of how easy it is to get a collection of 100 games on your system, on your Steam list, and you've maybe only played a handful. That when we were children, it was much harder to get a game. Often you'd only have one and you played it bugs and all because it was your game. I've gotten a few of those bundled games, and I have to admit, I don't feel a huge desire to play them much, if at all. I don't feel the same desire I did as a child when I do extra chores to save up money just to get one game.
Well, you also had more free time to play that game, so...
That's a little true. At the question of the week, I would have to say my favorite game based on cartoon was Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego? Oh, yes. No, excuse me. You are misquoting. It's not Where in the World. That is a separate show. This is Where on Earth is Carmen Sandiego with her in the red fedora. I love that she wasn't a typical villain. She seemed to encourage the kids to try and catch her, or she taunted them, actually. And if you were learning stuff about the world as well as being entertained. I also hated the way they depicted Simon and Captain N, and I think I found the Icky Pit and Mega to be everything... To be everything very annoying. It could be that I was only slightly older at the time, 8 to 10, so I think that act was wearing thin. I did love the Zelda cartoon, but vote goes to Carmen for helping me learn more about the world around me. Yeah, that was a fantastic cartoon, Where on Earth is Carmen Sandiego, with a super, super catchy theme song.
You know, the only thing I remember from that, because I didn't watch it, but I did know that Lynn Thigpen was was an actress on it, and I love everything Lynn Thigpen's ever done.
So. Which one was she? Was she Carmen?
No, she was the dispatcher, I think. She's a black woman, you know. Lynn Thigpen.
You're thinking of a different show. You're thinking of Where in the World, and since we specifically said cartoon, we are talking about Where on Earth.
Yeah, but
that is a different program.
Well, was it live action?
No, the one you're thinking of was live action. This
yeah,
was a cartoon.
That's what I'm saying. The live action one I was thinking of.
Right. No, we're discussing cartoons.
Okay.
It was your question.
Okay.
So yeah, you can actually go ahead and pick up a 10-episode DVD best of collection from Cookie Jar, because they still have the rights to Deke's Carmen. I picked that up last year for like $5. It's an awesome cartoon. I highly recommend it.
Anyways.
Good choice. I didn't even think of that.
Moving on to the gaming history, like promised, it is The Legend of Zelda TV series, or at least cartoon. The Legend of Zelda is an American animated series based on the Japanese video game series The Legend of Zelda, of course, for Nintendo. The plot follows the adventure of Link and Princess Zelda as they defend the kingdom of Hyrule from an evil wizard named Ganon. It is heavily based on the first game of the Zelda series, The Legend of Zelda, but includes some references to the second Zelda, Zelda II, The Adventures of Link. The show was produced by Deke Entertainment and distributed by Viacom in association with Nintendo of America. It comprised 13 episodes from which it first aired in North America from September 8th, 1989 to December 1st, 1989. Only 13 episodes, really?
Only 13 episodes. Man, it was such a good show.
Every episode of The Legend of Zelda follows the adventures of the hero Link and the Princess Zelda as they defend the kingdom. Oh, we already said that. Most episodes consist of Ganon or his minions either attempting to capture the Triforce of Wisdom from Zelda, kidnap Zelda, or otherwise conquer Hyrule. In some episodes, Link and Zelda are assisted and accompanied by the fairy princess Sprite. A common running joke of the series is Link's repeated failure to convince Zelda that he deserved a kiss for his heroic deeds. Whenever it seems they were going to kiss, they were interrupted.
Oh, that was such a great gag.
Yeah, especially since Zelda kissed, Captain N immediately in the crossover. So we'll get.
She did. See, that was a joke. she also kissed the White Knight that was in one episode.
Zelda has more of an active role in the show than in the video games, where she was merely a character that the player must rescue. While Link saves Zelda in a few episodes, she often fights beside him using a bow and arrow.
Oh, and boomerangs and all sorts of other magical weapons.
Link usually meets Zelda's rejection with a sarcastic catchphrase, and I'm not going to do it because I already have the soundbite.
I'll do it.
Go ahead.
Oh, you have the soundbite ready?
No, just do it yourself.
Well, excuse me, princess.
In one episode, Zelda used a more elegant version reflective of her royal upbringing. Well, pardon me. The complete Zelda series was released on October 18th, 2005 by Shout Factory and Sony BMG, with extra bonus features such as an interactive DVD games and line art from the series. However, it did not include all the associated The Super Mario Bros. Super Show live-action segments, some of which were included as a bonus features. The re-release has been discontinued and is out of print. However, Encircle Entertainment re-released the complete series on May 22nd, 2012. So
go ahead. And you know what? Starting from a bit of business history that was left out of this article, this cartoon aired once a week on like a Friday afternoon. It was a middle part of the Super Mario Brothers Super Show, and the way the format of that show worked was that they had like 6 minutes of live action, followed by a cartoon. And then they went, half of a 7 minute cartoon. And Monday through Thursday, it was Mario Brothers. Then they'd go to commercial break. Then they'd come back for the rest of the cartoon and then finish the live action storyline. So you only got to see the Zelda cartoon on Fridays. And they used to do a teaser at the end of the Monday through Thursday episodes. But by the time you had caught all the teasers, you'd basically just seen the entire episode, but without dialogue. It was fantastic. I love this cartoon.
From what I understand, the Super Mario cartoons were batshit crazy.
The Super Mario cartoons were, and this is around the time that both Mario and Zelda had gotten American sequels. So they were, clearly these cartoons had been in production, and you could tell that they tried to like shoehorn in extra, extra references to the sequels to help them sell the show or sell the games more. But what was fantastic about the Zelda series was that we got to see other people in Hyrule for the first time. And this is, they started coming out right before Zelda 2.
But the only other person in Hyrule that I can remember from the first game was the old man who gives you the sword.
Right, and the old woman who has the potion.
Yeah, that's the only people that I remember seeing in that game.
But no, I mean, like I said earlier, a white knight comes and makes Link jealous. Zelda gets a evil clone at one point. Hmm. Link and Zelda go together to rescue Zelda's father.
She is a princess, she's not a queen, so.
Right, no, but like these are things that we know that as fans of the Zelda series, we'd never seen before.
Was she the princess in the game, though? In the first game?
Was she a princess in the game?
In the first Zelda game?
Yes, she's on screen for exactly 4 seconds.
Now, I was just wondering if she was actually a princess, you know?
Yes, she's always been a princess.
The fairy, if I remember correctly, was that little glowing dot of light that circled around you?
Yeah, and it was the last episode that she revealed that her father was the king, and she didn't really consider herself a princess because that's just not how fairies do things. But yeah, that whole episode, Ganon wasn't even in that whole episode. They were built. Okay, so get this. That whole episode where we find out that the fairy's a princess is the king is having a water park built for the enjoyment of all of his subjects.
Yes,
and odd monsters are coming out of the pools that they can't figure out where they're coming from, and they're definitely not Ganon's monsters.
I remember those clips from that particular episode, yes.
Right. So it was the fairies protecting their, you know, magic spring or whatever, and that's where we get into that whole backstory. But that's exactly what I mean. Is that everything, you know, that was the point when Hyrule started feeling like a living kingdom at that point.
Yeah. And then it was reflected in later games.
Right.
Let me ask you a question.
And I'm very sorry, but Link's horse's proper name is Catherine. I'm just saying.
I wonder if that's a sick joke.
No, it's just Catherine.
Yeah. Do you know?
Well, no, because I mean,
Do you know the story about how Catherine the Great died?
I am moving past that because I am better than that, even if you aren't. However, that was the first time we saw Link riding a horse. He was leaving the kingdom because he felt the White Knight had replaced him, and he and his horse he got on his horse Catherine and was going to leave.
Now, Link in the cartoon was dark haired, wasn't he?
He was dark-haired.
And the thing is that every single incarnation of him later would present him as being a blonde.
Right, but the original didn't... The original was a very dark brown.
Yeah.
Like, it was a very dark blonde, light brown.
Zelda
was pure blonde, yeah. She was awesome.
Yeah.
But she wore a very late 80s, you know, pantsuit with a vest. It was awesome. That Zelda has never been beaten by any Zelda we've seen in the game, because the Zelda from the cartoon kicked ass.
You know what? I tell you what, we're going to make the next week's gaming history is going to be where on earth is Carmen Sandiego. So,
ooh, continue. Ooh, that, okay, so that'll be great for next week. And, you know, I want to hear, guys, go look up, you know, there's a 7-minute episode out there. I mean, come on, go look up one of the episodes on YouTube, watch it. And give me some thoughts. Tell me what you liked and didn't like about the cartoon.
Right.
The Legend of Zelda cartoon.
Anyway, the question of the week is very in the now. Since today is Black Friday, we'd like to know when you start your holiday shopping. I already discussed what I was doing today, so I don't have to answer that question. And Paul already said that he waits.
Well, no, I mean, I do my holiday shopping all year round. I mean, I am very conscious of the presents that I'm going to be buying, if any. And what I'm going to be getting, and I know the time of year when those things are most likely to be at their best price.
Right. Look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast or the forums at gamingpodcast.net/forum, or send your comments to fans@gamingpodcast.net. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. And Paul, do you own the box set of the Zelda? Just wondering, since you enthuse about it so much, I assume you've watched those episodes over and over.
I have my copy. Yeah, I mean, I watched it. I mean,
every so often.
I could do the entire first episode like from memory. Yuck! Another beautiful day in the magical kingdom of Hyrule.
What
boring place?
Something with Zelda.
It was like okay.
Wait, look, something in Zelda starting with Link waking up. That's
yeah,
not
oh, exactly,
heard of.
Exactly. It's like yeah. Yuck! Another beautiful day in the magical kingdom of Hyrule.
Okay.
Boring place.
We don't have 23 minutes extra to have you.
It's not 20. It's 7 minutes long.
Oh.
I'm not going to do it. But you cut me off anyway. But it would have been really. It would have been a really funny outtake. But now you don't get it.
No. I know. But
now you don't get it. No, you don't get it.
I don't have enough time for this. So,
nope. You're not going to get it. You're not going to get a sound clip of me doing it. Nope.
Anyways, we'll see you next week.
Bye, Bonds. Screw that. Buy me a present.
Okay.
No, I'm kidding.
I'm not.
Please don't.
Well, excuse me, Princess.